Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. This is April the 17th, 2019. My special guest is the Chicago rock band Go Time. So far, we have Marco, Steve, and Scott on. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thanks. Hey, John. Good to be back, man.
Yeah. It's great to have you guys on. I was thinking, you know, Scott and I have talked about having you guys come to Columbus, and I think I have a plan.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, the plan. You guys have like barbershop quartet outfits you could put on. We could get you in. we could get you into the Columbus barbershop quartet thing. We could get you here, and then you just bring your instruments out and start playing.
We need to be like an evil barbershop quartet, like black barbershop quartet outfits and skulls,
man,
or something.
That is the contrast of all time, John, compared to what we do. But that would be we'd be up for anything, man. Just to come out your way, that would be cool.
That would
be
good. Yeah, and if I come see you guys, you have to wear barbershop quartet outfits. And if you see me,
would the Darlington family be able to deal with us staying in the house? That's an even bigger question.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that would not be a problem. You would, yeah. That's with five kids, all five grown kids, and that would be awesome. I would really, we could do that. Bring your families and come on out. That would be just amazing.
Oh man, Your front porch looks like the perfect place, I think, for us to hold like an intimate show, don't you think? Like a yard party type of thing.
You know, we've had artists here before, and it's worked out great. And we're actually there's a Columbus rock band called Son of Dribble. And do you think that's a cool name? Yeah, it's kind of different. And,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're going to be here. They're coming this summer. They're setting up and going to play do a live show here on John Talk Radio. Son of Dribble.
That's very cool.
So. Wow. That would be. I can't see why we can't have a concert series with Go
Time. That'd be pretty damn good.
It's not that far. What, 6 hours maybe? I don't, if that, maybe.
That,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
doable. Hey, I've done much less than 6 hours, so I'd be ready to go. Let's,
yeah, I think that would be awesome. Yeah, let's do it.
I'm in.
We would really have a good time. Plus. Yeah, I don't know if you guys are into like vinyl, and there's a lot of really cool clubs and vinyl shops and clubs here in Columbus that you know, we could go to. And my kids know all the different bands in town, so we would have a great time. But I would love for you guys to come out and play, and let's do that. We're going to do that. That'll be
yes.
Too cool.
Serious.
Sounds
think,
like a plan. We will figure out how to make it work this time around.
Yeah. Well, my guest, our Go Time, and we were talking a little bit. I think we've done every album. I don't think we did the first album, but we started doing them, and we've had some great shows. We just had a lot of fun, and I think you guys are amazing, and I love the new album. When I was talking about vinyl, we went to my family. I went out with a bunch of the kids this weekend to Record Store Day, and we were going to all these different places. And I was thinking about how cool it is now for these different groups that are putting vinyl out, and bands that I've interviewed and bands that I'm interviewing. And I was thinking, man, I don't think you guys could do that with this album. That would be five discs.
Exactly. It'd be more like the Clash's Sandinista or something, where I think you've got actually three full vinyls with that record.
Oh,
good. We might even put past three.
Yeah, I was thinking of that because there's some pretty cool places. There's a place here in Columbus that does that. You know, they've been around since the 60s that do vinyl, and they have a recording studio and everything like that. But I was thinking, my goodness, you guys have, is it 19 songs on the latest release?
One of you guys might know better, because I always lose track.
I'm counting 12.
There you go.
Steve,
I guess it's 19. It looks like it's 19. Yeah, 19.
Yeah, that would be a lot of vinyls, but I just think it's cool. And plus the fact, I don't know if you guys, Chicago gets cool stuff going on there before we do, but like right now, a lot of the bands are doing their music on cassettes. Have you ever thought about that, or is that something?
Wow, man.
I feel like that's where we started. That would be like walking backwards or something.
Right. We never did 8-track, though. We could try 8-track, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's a big
man.
Good luck
they
finding
talking
a player.
Well, see, that's the thing. I told them, like, bands will now give me cassettes, and I'm thinking, this is cool. I have no idea what to do with it. I don't have a cassette player. Yeah, I can't hear the music, but it looks cool.
I was going to say, there's nothing like going back to the world of 8-track when, you know, let's say you're listening to Led Zeppelin 4 and it's like, da 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 da, and then it fades back up and in. It's a bit of a mood breaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those days. I had two 8-track tapes. I had Woodstock and Three Dog Night. And that's all I had. So we just played them over and over and over. It got to a point where I really don't like either one of those right now. So
it's funny that you say that, because a couple of the ones that I remember having, and the talk about diversity, I remember having John Lennon's Double Fantasy, and I had Nevermind the Bollocks by the Sex Pistols.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
That's an interestingly eclectic mix of 8-tracks.
Yeah, those are good. Yeah, you can't beat that. I mean, good Lord, that's some good stuff. But what we want people to know is where they can get the, I'm pretty sure you guys got a Facebook page. You have gotimeband.com, and
yes,
you
sure.
are on CD Baby, Bandcamp, iTunes, and that's where
Amazon, iTunes, sure, all those places, Bandcamp. We're accessible, to say the least, but you can always get to everything from gotimeband.com.
Yeah, and that's cool because, you know, I think it's important for people to understand what's going on with the band and understand who the band is, and they can go different places and get the music, but I always kind of like to direct them to the band's website. Now, I got a question for you, and I know this is probably – it's like just kind of in the music industry part of it, but with Amazon, I mean, your music is available everywhere, right? I mean, anywhere in the world that people have Amazon accounts?
Absolutely, and I got to say I'm always amazed when all of a sudden if I do a search and then I come up and, you know, it's like Amazon Japan, Amazon Denmark, Amazon Germany. It's always interesting to see, and then on the back end with the distribution side, I was telling the other guys at practice the other day, you know, I hadn't looked at sort of our account that tracks any of that for a long time, and all of a sudden I sort of looked at the last album, Six, and, you know, it was like 1,600 downloads of a couple different songs. I was like, wow, where did that come from? You know, and it's just interesting to realize how, you know, that whole digital world gets a little bit away from you because you don't really feel connected to it, you know? We're all pretty old school guys, and when we
yep.
see digital sales, let's say, through CD Baby, we see who it goes to and where they're from. And it's kind of like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool, but then the whole digital world is just mind-blowing in a way.
It is kind of a nice thought, John, to think that a 20-something in Glasgow, Scotland is actually listening to something from maybe Speak or one of the early albums. You know, it's just kind of weird, but that's cool. That's what we've got nowadays. So.
And it's kind of odd because sometimes we'll put out a new album and all of a sudden sales might be a little slower on that, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, it spikes sales on a different disc. Like we had a big run on, I think our third album, Bone Shaker. All of a sudden, just for no reason, and it was like, okay, that's been out quite a while. Why not?
Yeah.
You know. So there, you know, there's no rationale. There's no telling why, how, or what is happening.
Yeah,
it'd be nice
to think, John, that in the middle of London, some teenager was getting screamed at from a parent because he had heart to pull the trigger, like just cranked to high heaven right in his bedroom. Wouldn't that be a thought? I mean, I think that's that'd be amazing.
Yeah, and that goes to my next question because I know that by talking to you guys and get to know you guys and knowing what this show is all about, that's what it's about. It's about sharing your music. It's not about, you know, like I've talked to some younger bands that are really into the numbers, and it's all about the numbers, and it's all about the metrics, and it's all about this, and they're trying to make, you know, get into this group and get this going and see their numbers go up and down and making changes. And I think that's all cool. That's kind of, you know, music business. But I think the coolest, absolutely, is just like you said, people listening to your music. Period.
Yeah, that's pretty funny because I could care less about any of those things. We just do what we do. And,
yeah,
and it's a big plus if someone's listening. So you know, and I don't think that'll really ever change. We're a different animal altogether. But as you see, even so, I have some friends in the Chicago music scene who every time we put out an album, the first question is like, why are you guys actually putting out another disc? Which is sort of like, well, I don't really know any other way to consume music, but from then listening to it in a complete, you know, piece. And then the second question is always sort of like, why do you have to put so many songs on every disc? And for me, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, we've always had an interesting process. I always sort of demo everything, and then I, you know, it's sort of the end of sort of a year's time space. I'll have anywhere from 60 to 75 demo tunes, and I just drop it on the guys and say, what do you like? And as a democratic unit, we decide the ones that we kind of like. Even for the current album, we decided on 25 songs. We record 25 songs, and 19 fit on the disc. Mm. You know, so it's always an interesting choice, and I hate to make those choices on my own because, you know, no one can always know what the best song is. It may be the best song to them, but maybe not the best song to the public, maybe not the best song for the group, maybe not the best song. You know, you don't know.
True.
You sort of work in a bubble these days, especially with the world of digital music. So.
Yeah, that's a great point. I go through these things with interviews where I kind of go into certain subjects and talk a lot about it. And I interviewed somebody two interviews with a question mark. I don't know if you guys are familiar with.
Oh, sure.
Question mark.
And I listened in. So I love it. 36 Tears, is it?
Yeah. Well, it's, it's 96, but,
96 Tears. Sorry.
Oh. Yeah, I think I might have started out with 36 Tears. But one of the things that when you were talking about that, Scott, is that it made me think about what he was saying, where he said he doesn't want to be influenced by anyone. He doesn't want to be influenced by anything in the music industry. He doesn't listen to anything else. He said he casually listens to music, but he doesn't listen to it to try to form any of his writing or, you know, productions. And it's like, I thought, that's a pretty interesting way of looking at it. It's kind of an anti-marketing way. It's just do it, put it out there. If it sticks, it sticks, and it's good, it's good. And if it's what we want it to be, then it has integrity. And
right.
I think that's a pretty cool way of looking at it. I like that because you're going to be happy with it, right? I mean.
Well, you have to be.
Yeah.
Or you try to be, you know. But I think that when you start to throw things the way of, okay, let's make it, you know, all of a sudden, like really compressed, distorted, blah, 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 is popular today. I think once you try and shove things into that box, whatever it might be for the day, you know, you could just absolutely ruin, you know, the genius of whatever song that is you come up with. And it could be, go from being a great song or a greatly written song to an absolute piece of garbage in a very short period of time. So,
do you guys also, when you get the songs, and do you try them out live at all before you record them? Have you done that?
I think that these guys would be a better choice, but I actually think they just pick from demos, and then I think the process is quote unquote we go time-ize it. So, you know, it's. But they'd be better to answer that question than I would.
Well, no, we've never experimented just trying something live on people. I think we've just kind of hunkered down with the band, try to decide, you know, what sounds good, and then kind of, you know, kind of separate ourselves from playing shows, and then kind of hunker down into the bunker and start to listen to demos and record and, you know, see what we like.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, I was just wondering if you've ever done that, because I've been to shows where I'm thinking that maybe it's the first time anybody's ever played the song. Not, you know, I haven't been to your shows, but, and I thought it sounded, and they've even told me before that they'll try things out and see how the crowd responds to it. So it was just kind of a curiosity there.
Yeah, right, kind of like comedians trying their material out on stage, right, John? It's, you know, I think with, like Steve was just talking about, and Steve and I have this conversation a lot. It's the eternal struggle is we talk about, Scott and I have talked about this, is as musicians, and Scott writes obviously the vast majority of stuff, we have one mindset because we like to play, and we like to play all kinds of different stuff, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's what people want to hear. So you have to balance that when you go in a new material and go, listen, we really dig this, but is anybody going to want to listen to this? You know, I mean, especially stuff you put out recorded-wise. You can do different things in a live show. You can play an instrumental piece and all that stuff you'd never maybe record, but it's a whole different animal, the recording process for people to actually consume. So, and especially in the modern era, like Scott was talking about, the digital era where people, it's a one-off. People, you know, they grab just a piece of you and not the whole thing. So it's interesting.
I got to say, over the years, I mean, we've been lucky enough to get a lot of radio support from a lot of different places, not only in the world, but different states, that kind of thing. But, you know, obviously, since we're in Chicago, we run into quite a few DJs who are big supporters of ours. And I always find it fascinating when they say, yeah, this album is different than that album, and this album is different than that album, but yet it always sounds like Go Time. And in my head, I always ask the question, what does that mean? You know, what does
right.
Go Time sound like? I have no
right.
idea. But somehow everybody always seems that they say we have a particular sound that no one else has.
Right. I never know what to say when people say, well, you're in a band. Huh? What do you sound like? It's like, oh, boy, that's a tough one. It's like, I really have no answer.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, because if you listen to the CD, it's, you know, especially the new one, it goes up, it goes down. It's got some, you know, really hard rockers. It's got some, like, melodic, nice, you know, pleasant songs, you know. So it's really hard to nail it down, honestly.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Next question, and we'll take a music break here. But so when you guys listen to, let's say you go back and you listen to the early recordings of Go Time, your first album, your second album. Let's just say the first album. I'm a big fan of any band's first album. I think that's one of the coolest things. You can really hear what it's like before anything, before they start working on anything. It's just pure what they are most of the time. When you guys listen to that first record and then listen to Midway, what do you think? What do you think that trip, that bridge between that point and this point? I mean,
wow, I
do
think
you
it's
feel
horribly produced?
Yeah, it's a little raw.
Raw would be a
good
way to put
it. Songs are good, but I wish we had all the recordings, equipment and sense abilities that we have now. Would be.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting too, because, you know, and you guys know this more than I do, but when I would talk to different groups and bands where they would go way out of their way to not sound professional and to sound like, okay, we're recording on an 8-track tape in my basement, and like the band, the Black Keys from, they're from Akron, I think, Ohio.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they've tried very hard to sound raw and kind of like they're not in a studio with a $1 million budget, which they are now. And I go back and I think now they're, you know, I've listened to Dan Auerbach's, some of his stuff, and he said, you know, we want to sound raw. We want to sound like we're just starting off. And that's why you guys would know this more than anyone, how you, when you listen to yourselves then and you're thinking, okay, how, like you, I think it was Steve or somebody said they liked the songs, but the production was not that great. But what do you think about that beginning though, that genesis, what's that mean to you guys? That first,
well, it's really funny because, you know, we started in an era where, you know, Pro Tools was not prevalent, and we were working with reel-to-reel, and then we went to the beginning of digital, and then moved to Pro Tools. So really, it was just more a matter of just adjusting to the times, and we've always been pretty DIY, where we do everything at home, and we rely on ourselves, in the past, we even when we record at home, we take things out to be mastered, you know, by a pro. We used to work with Mike Hagler at King Size Sound Studios, who, you know, worked with people like the Mekons, Nico Case, Wilco. I mean, he mastered and actually did the engineering and so forth for Wilco Summer Teeth. So, you know, we took it to a point where, you know, we were working with some real quality people after we had recorded the album and mixed it. This Midway, for to be quite honest, is the first time we actually literally did everything in-house, including the mastering.
Wow.
So, you know, we've really become or learned over time how to become our own unit that doesn't do anything outside of our own, you know, realm. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But, you know, I just think when you talk about metrics or the economies of making albums, I think, you know, we finally learned how to do it and make it super affordable and be able to be that band that can do live gigs and pay for their own discs and reproduce them and make albums as regularly as we want, which a lot of people can't do that because it can get very pricey if you're not working on your own.
That makes perfect sense, and that defines success to me. It's like you guys have done a really good job at that. Now, we'll take a music break here in a second, but when you guys are putting – I know you talked about, you know, having somebody come in and mix it and professionals listening to it outside of the band. How good are you guys at, like, saying, okay, this is finished? Is there a problem there? Because I think you could always look at it, whether it's a painting or whether it's a song or what it is in art, that it can always change. It can always maybe be a little different. When do you know the song is done?
Well, I'm gonna throw that to these other two, because usually I know when it's done on my own. Being that I'm the guy who's actually engineering now and mixing and mastering the albums at home, because I have a full Pro Tools studio at home that's our practice space as well as a studio. For me, it's very easy because I say, like, okay, I feel like it's done. But then I throw it off to the other three guys in the band.
So my question to you, Scott, would be, when do you know it's done?
I hear it and I say, okay, it's done. You know, I mean, it's just more of an instinctive thing to my own ear. But Stevie and Marco, what do you guys think?
Well,
I mean,
here's what's what, though, John. So tell me, Scott, what would be the maximum number of mixes you did on any given song on this album, though, right? 70 or 80?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, it can go anywhere from 15 mixes to, you know, 60. It's just, when you say full mixes, it's funny because every day I'll sit down, you know, we'll be done with a song and I'll mix it and I'll go listen to the car on the way to work maybe and say, yeah, I don't like this about it. So a lot of times each mix is a little tweak, but not necessarily every day is like a huge, you know, like I'm at A and all of a sudden we're at, you know, I got to change it to N that day, you know. So every day is a progression till all of a sudden, you know, one day you say like, hey, I feel really good about that. It's done.
It's the eye exam. You know about eye exams, right? You go and they flip the lenses down in front of your eyes and they go, this one or this one. You really do get to the point where you can't remember which is the better one sometimes, because it's just – that's why I tell Scott sometimes, because he's engulfed in it, you got to get away from it. And it's probably a little bit easier for me and Steve when we walk down in the recording studio and listen to what he's gotten done and say, oh, you know, I really like that. And Scott will go, really? I think it still might need this, but – You really can overdo it. You sometimes really do have to go with your gut instinct and the visceral part of your your musical sense to say, you know what, enough is enough. Like this song is great the way it is. We don't need to add any more, take any more away. It's hard for the person who's doing all that Scott's doing to sit and kind of sit back and go, okay, I don't want to do any more, because he's just been staring at the screen for hour upon hour. So,
And it's funny because it's like if you listen to the basic tracks that you record before you start to touch them, and then you listen to an end product, I don't care who it is, they'd say like, oh my God, that's complete garbage. But because every facet, and I think the listener can't even imagine that, you know, every drum needs EQ, every drum needs compression. You have to think about the spatial feel of things, so everything needs reverb to some level. And then once you have every particular facet of every instrument, you know, distilled down to a perfect sound, then you actually have to blend all those, and then you get done blending all those and say, I have a nice mix, and then you say, oh, well, now it's time to start mastering all those things into something. You know, somebody who doesn't work with the process doesn't realize, like, how crazy it can get.
Oh, I totally understand.
Yeah, just reality.
Yeah, I think it would drive me crazy, but as a friend of mine would say, it would be a short drive. But that's a little humor in tonight's show. But I do think that it's interesting to me, you know, Scott, when you're listening to the song. What I was trying to get at was just, what is it that you're? Do you have like an image of what you're driving for? Is it like there's this place I want to take this song, or is each song different?
I think that place that you're trying to drive it to is a really loose, you know, it would be like saying, okay, I'm in Chicago today and I want to drive to Louisiana because I like the idea of Louisiana. But I mean, once you get there, you're like, okay, I'm in Louisiana. Now what? Mm. You know, yeah. I mean, it, the conceptual of where you're going to, this still got to be somewhat fluid before you distill it down to all of a sudden you're on Bourbon Street. You know, there's so many steps to get there. You know, yeah. I got to pack, I got to put the suitcase in the car, I got to drive the car, I got to stop for gas along the way, I got to get blah, 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 blah. And now I'm in Louisiana. How do I get to Bourbon Street? You know, there's so many steps along the way that, you know,
then Scott sees the sign Bourbon Street and you know you're there.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I see the sign, oh, we're on Bourbon Street, and I go, wow, I had no idea we were actually here. So
this is cool.
Yeah, great. Yeah. We got here somehow. So
well, my guests are Go Time, and their latest release is Midway, and you can go on their website, gotimeband.com, and purchase it. You can get it in CD form. You can get it on digital form, and you can go to CD Baby. You can go to Bandcamp. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Amazon, everywhere, and it's Go Time. Guys, let's play a song. I would like to play Hole in My Head, Hole in My Mind. I have a hole in my head. Hole in my
great
mind.
One.
And this
I feel like I have a hole in my head every day, so don't worry.
John, we just call it A-hole ourselves as far as the band is concerned. So.
It's quite funny. Actually, Marco's making a joke because, you know, quite often when you're digitizing things and, you know, along the way I make mixes and give it to the guys and I had mistyped something at one point. I wrote A-hole in my mind. So forever within the band.
And Stevie jumped on it.
Yeah, so forever within the band, that song will always be, to us on stage, as A-hole in my mind. So.
And I will definitely request it if I come to see you guys. Let's play it. We'll be right back after this. This is Hole in My Mind. The band is Go Time. The show is John Talk Radio Independent Music Showcase. We'll be right back.
See you.
And we're back on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We're here with Go Time. We have Scott, Steve, and Marco with us. And the website is gotimeband.com. The latest release is Midway. And we're listening to songs and talking about the album. And I really like that song, guys. I think that – do you release singles? Do people still do that? Or
for us, no. We just put out a record, and that's it. But I'm sure – people probably do. That, you know, that's the weirdness of the new digital age. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, like
that
you
would
said,
be
John,
my.
Generally, on they're going back to vinyl and cassette. Even we started, and Stevie will remember this. We started when we started recording. We actually have I think it was Everything Right with the three of us were in a band, Prairie Town, and we did an album on cassette
oh, yeah.
a long while back. Yeah. Probably one of the best things we've done, but we've never just released. We haven't even done an EP like a lot of bands do an EP, John, just to kind of give a sampling,
right.
you know, a couple songs and stuff like that. We've always gone, and mostly because Scott writes.
We go big.
Yeah. every time Scott go when he's in the writing mood, every time he goes to the bathroom, he writes another song and then he sends it to us. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Well, not another.
The reality
song.
Is actually since Midway just came out, I think I've got about 14 new demos in the can.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, it hasn't been that long, so you know, for me
that
to
really
write,
is awesome.
For me to write between 55 to 75 songs in a year is nothing. Very similar to your home state guy, Robert Pollard.
Well, I was thinking about that when you guys were talking about coming out here, because Dayton's an hour from our house, and I go to this vinyl shop. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you guys before. It's called Toxic Beauty. That's where Bob hangs out, and he buys his vinyl there. Yeah. So they say, the guy, it's a really nice guy. He goes, oh, yeah, you'll see Bob in here. But, you know, just kind of be cool, leave him alone, let him just kind of walk around. And because the guy has the most obscure vinyl you've ever – I mean, there's nothing probably that you've heard of. And he prides himself in that. And it's like Bob likes to come in. And but that would be – if you guys come, man, we could go there to the places they used to play all the time.
That's
strip.
Great. I am a huge Guided by Voices fan by far.
Yeah.
I appreciate what Bob does big time.
Yeah, couple of those clubs are still there and kids still go there. It's like a, you know, an homage to Mr. Pollard and what happened back there in the 90s, but yeah, that would be awesome. So, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I would like to just one thing that's very interesting to me and hopefully it is to the listeners. It is, and Scott and I have talked about this before, but with like Gear Talk and what you guys play, and it to me, you know, I could go on, and I love listening and talking to people about the sound because it's kind of like this game. If you hear a sound, you hear a record, and you hear the guitar, what kind of guitar is that, or what kind of amp is he playing through, or and what kind of drums is that, and as drummers, I mean, people don't understand, you know. The sound that drummers, the work that goes into that. And I would love to hear what you guys are playing. Like if you're playing live, if you were going to play live like tonight or tomorrow, what gear would you play and why do you use that? And let's start with Steve.
There you go.
Mm. Yeah. So on the recording, that's actually a Tama kit. But now I just recently purchased for shows because I haven't bought anything new for shows in a long time. It's a PDP kit. It's all maple. So it's something really nice. And actually, I really like the look of it. It's a black sparkly thing with all black hardware and stuff. So it's got a nice kind of got a different sound to it than the studio kit. It's got smaller toms. It's got a little bit of a higher sound but nice resonance to it. So I basically bought it for that. So it's kind of a little bit different sound but a really, really good tight sound too. I like it.
Now, do you set it up? Do you set it up in your studio to play, like at Scott's, or do you take it home and practice there? I mean, how does that work? Because it can't be the easiest thing setting it up and tearing it down.
No, actually, so the Tama kit is Scott, so God bless him. He bought the kit for the studio for me, so I don't have to haul things back and forth. So the show kit stays home in my basement so I can practice, and then the Tama kit's over at Scott's where we record.
Because
so.
I always feel bad for the drummer, Steve, because it seems like everybody just takes
that.
Off.
I appreciate that. Yes,
and you're taking,
John, you
taking
got
the
it,
cymbal
man.
Off. And it,
yeah,
you know,
typically at 2 a.m. when I'm packing up, I say, I wish I was playing piccolo, honestly. So.
Or I hope you can come back the next day.
The rest of us are harmonica players compared to Steve. I mean, Steve has to pack up. While he's packing up all the circus tents, we are already out on the midway, good reference, and talking to the folks while Stevie's still doing his thing because he does. He's got the whole 9 yards to pack up and get the hell out of there.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. I was just this last weekend, I was watching the drummer after the show, and everybody was having a great time. And he was like sweating and like, oh, no.
Yep.
Because they had another band coming right in, so they had to, you know, get everything out. But so what is it when about the sound of it, Steve? I mean, that's the thing that I think a lot of people miss with drummers. It's like that's you've got to get the sound just right. It just has to be tuned correctly and everything just set up the way. How long does it take you to set up your gear for a gig?
Let's see. It's probably about a half hour or so, something like that, to get it just about right. Yeah, it's not terrible. I've been doing it 30 years or so now, so it's not. I kind of got it down. And then it's just kind of tuning them up a little bit to make sure I got the sound I want to go with, you know, so not terrible.
How about you, Marco? Talk about your gear. Talk about what you're playing through right now, what bass and amp you're playing through, and why.
Yeah, I'm a Fender guy, John. I'm Fender Jazz Bass. I've had a Precision Bass and a PV like early in the days. Played a little bit of Scott's Gibson Thunderbird on a couple cuts here and there, but that's a different animal. But the Fenders, and especially like even the Jazz Bass, I love it. You can throw it down a flight of stairs; it's still EADG when you bring it back to the top. It really is a big thing, though, because we deal in a lot of, you know, club action, and Steve will testify to this because he's got his fan back by him. And Scott, the temperature control is not great in the Chicago clubs we play, so you can go from heaven to hell in an instant as far as what the temperature's like on stage. And tuning is just a big deal. The Fenders. I've got a Rickenbacker 4001 that I co-own with a buddy of ours from a previous band, and that thing's very temperamental. The Fender just, with very little tweaking, stays there through the whole show. So, love that. Playing through like a Hartke cabinet with an acoustic 1x15 on top, and then using a Behringer head to drive the whole thing. So, but Scott and I talked a lot about, we play a lot of different size clubs. You don't want to kill people with your volume. We can be a very loud band. Our music can be very intense at times, but we also have a lot of different shades to it. So we've kind of learned to play somewhere in the middle with a lot of feeling now and just kind of, you know, tweak it. So it's right at the right level where it's good for us, good for the audience. It's been a long time coming, but I think on this album, I think we're finally just about there as far as our live act. So
that's awesome. So when do you think about Marco, like changing up any of your stuff, or is you pretty like your cabinets and the head and all that stuff, or is it pretty much just you're cool with the way it is? Because I know people that are constantly interchanging and getting different speakers and trying different sounds.
Yeah, you know what, John? I got to say this, for the most part, all the years that I've done this, bass players have maybe a couple, two or three, for the most part. There's some, really obsessed guys, but they usually have a couple go-tos, even guitarists do, but guitarists like Paul Schmidt is not with us tonight. Paul's our other guitarist and vocalist in the band. And Scott, like when those two guys get to talking, Steve and I kind of like go in our own part of the world because they start talking guitars and gear and stuff. Guitars, John, are constantly fiddling with and own tons of different instruments and amps, and are looking for, they're always looking for different sounds. They look for different sounds within the different songs that we're playing. The bass sound is pretty stable usually throughout most of the recording and the live act stuff. So once you find it, you just kind of stay with it. It's not like, you know, you're got a whole pedal board in front of you. Like when you talk to Scott about where he's come from, and you got to ask him this question, John. When I started with Scott, Scott had like a volume pedal. Now it's like NASA in front of him. he could look right. He's laughing, but he could launch a space shuttle from that board that's in front of him now. So
that's cool. Yeah, I understand that. I just sometimes think like, or is there a sound that you just said, okay, this is cool, this is exactly what I want, I'm good?
Like to your point, Jen, so depending on what type of music you're playing, like we're mostly a pretty loud rock band, and Steve hits the drums like no one I've ever seen. So, and with the guitars like they are with Paul and Scott playing, I try to find something that cuts through. I want to make sure that people feel and know the bass is there, right? But doesn't
That's
overwhelm
cool.
everything.
Yeah.
So I do need a certain amount of wattage on stage, and I also need, I just tweak it enough that whether it's the treble or whatever, that it, and the mids, that it just, it cuts through the rest of the mix of those guys playing. And I love to hear them playing on both sides of me. So it's not too dirty. It's somewhere in between. And I guess that's what I look for. And then I just leave it. You know, I mean, that's kind of how.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a good answer. Good answer. I like that. Okay, it's your turn, Scott. So.
Well, it's funny because I was so, going into this record, I so was looking for something completely different than I'd ever done. And I think I used three different guitars making the record. And two different amps. I used a Vox AC30, or I used a Music Man amp from the 70s, which I've always used Music Man amps since probably the early 90s. And, you know, so I pitched back and forth between a Fender Jazzmaster, a Fender Starcaster, which is a hollow body, and a Rickenbacker, which I've always been known for playing Rickenbackers my whole life, since the early, well, mid-80s for sure. And the reality was it was great for the album. It gave a lot of different tones. But when it came down to it, I started playing with some of these different combinations for live play when we were starting to practice the record to say, okay, we're going to go out and play live. And at the end of the day, I went exactly back to what I've been doing since the early 80s, or since the mid-80s, which has always been a Music Man amp and a Rickenbacker. And, you know, it was funny because I so wanted to change, but I just went back to what my comfort level was, and it actually works the best for me. So I thought I was smarter than the room trying to change it up, but the reality was I just went right back to where I was.
Yeah,
which just tells me I've had the right sound since the 80s.
and I love that. I mean, I think that's really cool. And I think that when I listen to certain bands and certain songs, the reason I asked that question was because I was talking to some people over the weekend about that and about the sound, because we heard this band and they were kind of a pretty close to a hardcore punk band. And with a female vocalist, and she was really good. And the lead guitar player was incredibly loud. And he was playing a semi-hollow body, which I would never associate with that type of music. But it sounded great.
Sure.
And, yeah, and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, it had a real distinct sound to it. And
sure.
It was... Yeah, I thought it was a Gretsch, but it wasn't. And I couldn't get close enough without, you know... looking like a creep to go, hey, what kind of guitar? What's that guitar? I wasn't going to do that. But,
and that's ironic because even Marco laughs about, you know, for the first time I've really been kind of using a pedal board, and it looks huge, but everything on it has such minimal degrees of difference. You know, like I'll have the same type of effect in, like, let's say small, medium, and large. And you know, I don't overpower anything at any point in time. You know, I just sort of decide by song, like, this is what I need. And, you know, I've always been a master of using the minimal versus the maximum. And I think a lot more of it is about the feeling you play with and the pressure you play with on the strings versus the effect. So,
yeah, I agree, John. Actually, Scott told me this, and actually I talk guitarists at all our gigs, and we had one this last weekend where we launched Midway, and you talk to those guys, and they love Scott's playing, and I asked them about their thoughts on guitar playing, because I'm like you, John, I'm interested, and they say it's in your hands. You know, you can have a Gibson SG or a Paul Reed Smith or whatever the heck it is, and you can have a Marshall stack or whatever you want, anything in between, but really it's kind of like any kind of athletic endeavor, where you can have the greatest set of golf clubs in the world. If you're not a great golfer, it's not going to matter. It's the same way with the guitarist or whatever.
That's a great point.
Yeah, it really is. And Scott's great, and it really is in his hands, and it's amazing. So he's just added stuff to it to kind of give it color and flavor and all that. And as the songs and the songwriting has progressed, as you see in Midway, the latest, I think that's why he's done it, because it allows him a little more freedom to give different, background to the tunes we're playing. So it's all worked out.
Yeah, it sounds
so, John,
great.
I'll turn the interview on you. I mean, you've been listening to us for a long time. Do you feel that we progressed over time, and do you think we have a certain particular sound?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. But yes to both of them, and I can always tell. I mean, there are bands that I've listened to that I've just got some music here recently, and I wasn't real sure if it was the same. It didn't even sound like the same band to me. It was a little different. Maybe the vocals were a little tweaked. You guys have a very distinct sound, and it's you, and it works great. And so, yes, I know when I'm hearing a Go Time song, and the new album is really, I love it. I think it's awesome. So it's a great, you've progressed. And I think that's what, you know, bands do. I when I talk about listening to the first album, I love doing that. And it doesn't mean that I don't like listening to the stuff that, you know, bands do down the road. But I kind of always kind of like to get that groove of that first album or maybe the second album. But, yeah, this is a highly recommended. If you're listening out there, gotimeband.com, Amazon, CD Baby, Bandcamp, iTunes. Guys, thank you so much. This is always so much fun to talk to you guys, and I really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Is there anything you'd like
you.
To sing in closing? Let's start with Scott.
In closing, well, actually, thank you for all the support you've given us over the years. I mean, it's been unbelievable, and every time we're actually, you know, you and I obviously share some messages, you know, privately outside of just doing shows, but it's always been so great to have your acquaintance and be on the show and be able to talk about what we do, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely,
it's my pleasure.
Second for me, and Stevie's probably the same. Stevie, we'll reconnoiter in Batavia, and then I think we head toward we head east. We go to Ohio. It's not that far away. Indiana, Ohio, we're there. Right?
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean,
we really have to
make it work, and we can do it. And so, hey guys, thank you. We'll work this out. We'll do the next album you come out. We'll do another show, but we'd love to have you out here in Ohio, and we'll make a weekend of it, and we'll have a great time. And I want to thank the listeners and the people. This is my 11th year doing this, and I just couldn't ever imagine doing it for this long and talking to all the musicians I've had, the great time I've had. So I want to thank the listeners and the supporters of independent music. So, guys,
absolutely.
Keep
going.
Yeah,
John.
It's yep. We'll just take her day by day. But one day at a time.
John, what is your favorite song off the new album?
Well, I think the Hole in My Mind is probably the one I like the best.
That's interesting.
Perfect.
Yeah, that was my classic between Motown and The Clash. I was trying to put the two together, so, and I think I kind of did it. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Well, guys, and this is my second best right here. So have a great evening, and we'll talk to everybody later.
Thanks for having me.